Do you know that you hit what you focus on? You've probably driven with someone like this. I know most of you are, of course, not like this in your own driving, but have you ever driven with someone who's been driving along and they're like, oh, look, something shiny. And the whole car goes that way and you hit the rumple strips on the side of the highway and you reach over to grab. Yeah, none of you are like that, though, but there's an accident, right, on the one side of the road, and everyone's like, oh, cool. And then before long, there's a fender bender on the other side, because what you focus on seems to be the direction you go in life. I knew this one person, and I'm not making this up. He was four-wheeling. This was a long time ago. He was four-wheeling in the woods, and he was coming along the trail, and the trail split into two directions. You could go either way. And in the center of the two directions, there's a big tree. You know where this is going, right? He came in, I saw him the one day. He was all bruised up, head to toe. He was looking brutal. I'm like, what happened? Did you get in a fight or something? He's like, and we finally got the truth out of him. Instead of thinking, I'm going to go this way, or I'm going this way, he was thinking, I don't want to hit that tree. And you know exactly what he did? We hit what we focus on. I'm not going to go too over far in the power of positive thinking and the secret and all that nonsense that's out there. But the fact remains, what you focus on is what you become. And we are going to continue our series on heart work, on developing the character of God that will make us just feel at home in the new creation, the new heavens and the new earth, the new age that He has for us, in the kingdom of heaven. I've been talking about three steps we have to take each week. The first step to developing the right heart in us is know what our goal is, right? Know where we're heading. And if you've been at any of the last messages, you'll know that the goal is not just kind of floating out of our bodies and playing celestial harps on clouds in heaven while men serve you Philadelphia cream cheese. Sorry, I had to go there. The goal is much more real and concrete than that. We were created from the Garden of Eden with two roles. We were created to worship God as His priests, and we're created to rule with God, to rule under God. God rules over us in the same way it was our job to rule over His creation. And that purpose, that twofold purpose, to worship and reign, to be a king and a priest, it's never ended. It's never like God said, okay, you did a bad job on that, so let me write you up a new job that you'd be more apt to do. No, it's He redeemed us to continue in that role. And if you read Revelation all the way through, what's our role in the new heavens and the new earth? It is to worship as priests, and it's to reign as kings with Jesus. It's an amazing future He has for us. So what we're called to do today is develop the sort of heart that will prepare us for what will one day be the complete reality. We need to know what our goal is, worshiping in the new heavens and the new earth and ruling. We need to look at the steps required to achieve our goal, and then finally, we need to make those steps habits. We just need to make them second nature instead of make the second nature first nature, so that the things that will bring us in the right direction just become habits in our life. So we spent a lot of time clarifying our goal. I'm not going to clarify it anymore this morning other than what I just did. This morning we are going to look at what the first step is to actually becoming the sort of people God's called us to be. And we're going to look at morning people, clothes, and what's on your mind. So let's start with this. There's two kinds of people in this world. There's morning people and there's night people. So I'm curious, I got to ask. Morning people? Wow. Night people? The morning people take it with a resounding, yeah, I was going to ask, are you a morning person? Have you ever seen a sunrise? You know, everyone's seen a sunset. Sunsets are so cliche. I mean, they're pretty, but you see, everyone sees sunsets. Not many people see sunrises. Sunsets are like Tim Hortons coffee, and sunrises are like Oliver's espresso. Like it's that cut above. It's that fine beauty that you don't expect to see in your everyday world. I remember I was driving once. I was driving from Chaplo to Matisse or whoever you pronounce that little northern town there. Sorry, Lisa, you know that one. Matthijs, we'll call it Matthijs. I was driving from Chapleau to Matthijs around through Timmins and up, and I got dropped off at my car at Chapleau at about 11:45 at night. So it was an all-night drive. I got to my destination at 5-something or 6-something in the morning. And I drove through the darkest part of the night, and at one point I stopped to take care of business, and I looked up at the stars, and they were so real. They were just like gorgeous. It was pitch black. There's no background lights. And it was really pretty, but I got sleepy. It's driving all night, right? So I was getting sleepier and sleepier and trying to stay awake. And I'm like, oh, if I can just make it to Timmins, that'll give me the boost I need. So I made it to Timmins, and I got a Red Bull or something and tried to keep going and kept driving out north of Timmins, and it was dark, and I'm rubbing the sleep out of my eyes, but then something happened. And it was in the middle of summer, and it was at a high northern latitude up there. Just, did you know that the sun starts coming, well, not coming out, but the sky starts getting brighter, like 3-4 in the morning up there in the middle of summer. Just this little glow. And can you believe that sunrise gave me all the boost I need to make it the rest of the way? Just that little bit of change. And sure enough, that whole northern highway I was watching, and all these big shadows and things on the side of the road became more and more distinct and more clear. And then finally the sun, by that point I was facing away from the sun, so the sun was in the rearview mirror. But everything just lit up as the sun came over the horizon. Trees burst into color and everything, and everything became more real and more vivid. I watched a sunrise once sitting on a log that was propped up on a rock on a lake in the middle of this beautiful little lake. And I was there before sunrise, and I was sitting on the log, and it was cold. I had my jacket on, but it would warm up as the day goes on. And as the sky started to brighten, everything changed. All of a sudden, the birds started going off. Like, the birds started singing, and it was beautiful, and fish started jumping, and I didn't even bring a fishing rod because, as Daryl knows, there's no point when it comes to me. But the fish started jumping, fog started coming off the lake, and the sunrise, it just lights everything up so brilliantly. And I know you've seen sunrises for yourself. You know, I think Paul was a morning person. I wanted to read to you a couple passages that kind of suggest this. Romans 13 is where I'm going to start, 11 to 12. Listen to what Paul says here to the Romans. Besides this, you know what time it is, that the hour has come for you to wake up from your sleep. Now, he's talking spiritually, but he knows the metaphor from somewhere. You know what time it is. The hour is coming for you to wake up from your sleep, because salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. You know, that kind of throws us sometimes as Christians, because we're taught that the second we trust in Jesus, we are saved. And that's true. But in another sense, when Paul talks about salvation, he has in mind this new heavens and this new earth, this final redemption, this final statement. So he says, people, believers, it's time to wake up, because that salvation, that day, is nearer now than it's ever been. It's time to wake from your sleep. The night is far gone. The day is at hand, so let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk properly as in the daytime, not in orgies and drunkenness and sexual immorality and sensuality, not in quarreling and jealousy, but... And this is a curious statement, because when you say the words put on, you expect to hear your sweater or your clothes or your pajamas if you have young kids. Put on your pajamas. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh. Paul is saying that day when it's all going to come down is closer now than the moment you first believed. So what are you still doing acting like it's still night out? Put on Jesus Christ and start acting like it's the morning. The sunrise is here. Ephesians 5, 8 to 14. At one time, you were in darkness. But now you are light in the Lord. What a great statement. Not you have light or the light is shining on you. Now you are light in the Lord. Just as Jesus was the light of the world, as we are in him, We are light. For at one time you were in darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light, as children of the morning, if I could say it that way. For the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true. And try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, in that old age, in the night. Take no part in the darkness, but expose them. And how do you expose things that are in darkness? Light. And you are light. For it is shameful to even speak of the things that they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore, it says, and he quotes the Old Testament here, "Awake, O sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." Awake, sleeper, rise from the dead. I bought a new alarm clock this past year because my last one was loud, and I sleep far better than Donna does. Donna, with having Chase around right now, she can wake up really quickly to look after him, which is a blessing. And my alarm clock, when it goes off, it drove her nuts because it was one of these loud beep, 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 beep. Anyone have an alarm clock like that? Yeah, you know the one I'm talking about. It wakes you up, and the problem is it takes me about 30 seconds to realize it's going and actually turn it off. So Donna has ample time to hit me and shake me and wake me up. But I got this new alarm clock. It's called a Crescendo alarm clock, and it's fantastic. It's It starts off just by going like, beep, 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 beep. And it gets louder each time. So the longer you leave it, the louder it gets. So Donna hears the first one, of course. And then she's able to say, wake up, before it gets so loud that it's completely obnoxious. And the only problem we had was the time that Donna was looking after Chase and I was in the shower and I hit snooze instead of turning it off. And every time it went off, it got louder. And I'm telling you, that thing could wake the dead. But we are called to wake up. We are called to get up, to open our eyes, to be children of the morning. You don't have to be a morning person in the natural world. If you're a nighthawk, that's great. But in the spiritual sense, the new day is here, and it's time for us to put off the things of the night and to wake up and live like the day is dawning, because it is. I have a little chart on one of the slides that kind of explains what Paul was talking about here. He basically, in all his writings, and it's in a number of them, in Ephesians and Colossians and Romans, he says the old age is like the night. And the night is tailing off. The old age, the night is setting. The old way of doing things. You remember what we were talking about last week? Blessed are the greedy. Blessed are the powerful. Blessed are those who get what they want. Blessed are the ambitious. That old way of doing things is tailing off. And at the same time, I put the cross in there because when Jesus died, he launched the new age. And we have a choice right now, because the old age and the new age, the night and the day, are overlapping. And we can choose to live like we're still in the old age. And what does that look like? Anger, jealousy, malice, backbiting. Or we can choose to put away those things from the old age and put on the way of living in the new age, which is, remember the Beatitudes? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the gentle. Blessed are, and so on. All these characteristics that would not be at home in the old age, they are at home in the new age that is already dawning. And one day that old age will completely come to an end. It's sometime in the future. And we are called to live like we're already in the full new age. Not the bad type of new age. You know what I mean? See, we're living like the sun has already risen, because he has. We are living like everything is becoming more real and more concrete. Things, we don't see things like shadows anymore. We see things in full color. We see new life springing up, just like when I was by the lake, I heard the birds start to sing and the fish start to jump. The new age, we see life where you wouldn't expect it. You see life where people wouldn't expect life. So we need to develop the heart that feels at home in the new age. So, what's the first thing you do in the morning? One of the first things you do in the morning, you get dressed, right? Makes sense. Most of us get dressed. Although for me, I'm telling you, a good day is a day I don't have to put my pants on. I just stay in my pajama bottoms the entire day. I've got these ratty old pajama bottoms. They got like racing stripes down the side, so it looks like I'm being athletic, but really, they only go to bed. And a good day for me is just staying those things all day. Like that's the ultimate Friday or Saturday for me. I just don't have to leave the house once. And if I do, it's only the end of the driveway and get away with wearing them. I was, if you know my house, I was sitting at the computer, and the computer like shines out the window by the front door. And I was sitting there doing something, and Donna was feeding Chase in the chair, and there was a knock on the window. So I looked behind me, and there was this woman I've never met in my life. And it turns out Donna had been selling some stuff on a Muskoka Moms group, and this woman came over to buy some of the stuff that she had. Well, I had to, you know what I was wearing. And if you know my house, there's the big window that she knocked on, and then there's the door, and there's no barrier in between them, or there's no way I could run and get... So I just, hello, pleasure to meet you, make a good first impression. Donna, someone's here for you, not me. But for the most part, we put clothes on when we get up in the morning. It's what we do. And I want to revisit, I say revisit Colossians 3, because if you remember, it was about a year ago now, we spent a lot of time in Colossians. But I have to go back here because the image is so perfect for what we're going to talk about. So if you turn to Colossians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. Colossians 3, I'm going to read from verse 5 to verse 17. This is Paul talking about the old age, the new age, and talking about what we need to put on. So he says, put to death, therefore. He doesn't mince words, eh? Kill off what is earthly in you. Sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. That's a telling little statement. We worship the things we want. On account of these things, the wrath of God is coming. In these you too once walked, but when you were living in them. But now you must put them away. Put away anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices, and you have put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge of the image of its creator. Here there is not Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. Christ is all and all. So here's the good news. Put on, in verse 12, these are the clothes we're supposed to wear. Put on as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other. I kind of expected if one has a complaint against another, go to that person and deal with it. Oh, it's even more simple than that. If one has a complaint against another, forgive them. Forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you. That's the trump card, to use a bad metaphor. That, look how far Jesus has saved us. That's how we're supposed to forgive others. Above all, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. You wonder why we sing on Sunday mornings. And whatever you do, in word or in deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Paul talks about the characteristics of the old age and the characteristics of the new age. And here's, I think I mentioned this the first time I preached this, but it's so important for our topic. If Paul says you need to put on these clothes, humility, gentleness, kindness, meekness, you would expect him to say you need to take off these clothes, anger, lust, malice, judgment, envy. But he doesn't say that. He's a lot more direct. Put to death. Kill off. It takes effort. We are told to destroy those qualities in us that reflect the old age that we once used to live in and totally put on the new qualities. It's hard work, but anything worth doing takes effort, right? Anything that's really worth doing in this world takes effort. And why would we think it would be different in the Christian walk? You know, we're taught that it's so easy to become a Christian. All you have to do is say this prayer, repeat after me, dear Jesus. And we say it that way, and it is simple to become a Christian, but it demands your entire life. It carries a big cost. It's nothing we can earn. It's a complete gift, but God calls us to complete obedience as well. And it's difficult work to kill those things that we so like doing. The little backbiting statements about people that become so habitual and second nature to us. It's so difficult to put those things away. But we're called not just to take them off, but to kill them. To put them to death. And instead, put on, as if you're a newborn child, because we are spiritually, you put on your new clothes. And those new clothes look a lot like the Beatitudes: meekness, gentleness, humility, love, forgiveness for each other. This is almost like a clarified and expanded version of Romans 13 that I read earlier. In Romans, Paul just says, put on Christ, and then he goes on to another topic. Here he says, let me explain to you what it means to put on Christ. It means you put on those qualities of heart that he came to announce. Gentleness, meekness, goodness. And it sounds like the Beatitudes. I have a quote I wanted to read to you that kind of explains this process. And I said this before, but this whole series is kind of inspired by N.T. Wright's book, After You Believe. So if this is interesting at all and you read, you should buy his book because it's really good. And I'm not making money off it, in case you're wondering. But N.T. Wright said this: putting on, this idea of putting on the new qualities, is a matter of consciously deciding. So in your mind, consciously deciding again and again to do certain things in certain ways, to create patterns of memory and imagination deep within the psyche. And as we saw from contemporary neuroscience, even deep within the actual physical structure of the mysterious brain, putting on those qualities, here's how you do it. You do it again and again. And the more you do it, the more habit-forming it does. The more times you choose gentleness over anger, the more times you choose to forgive someone instead of to hold a grudge, the more times you do the sort of qualities that we're expected to live, the more habitual they come, the more habit-forming they come, and the easier it becomes the next time you're placed in a tough spot. That's what our life is. Our life is developing those habits that we're called to. It's tough, but that's what we would expect. Phil, you were talking to me once about your golf swing. Oh, I didn't even talk to him. I hope you don't mind me sharing this. But he was telling me that he went to an instructor once, and the instructor made you tweak one little tiny bit of your swing, right? How you were holding the golf club or something like that. I'm not a golfer, so he can correct me. This one little tweak of his, the way he held the club or the way he swung or something like that. And he said it felt like the most awkward thing in the world to swing that club the new direction, but it worked. He changed a habit and it worked. And that's what it's like in the Christian life. It's not natural for us when someone attacks us to say, I'm sorry, I forgive you. It's not natural. But the more you do it, the more you realize we're becoming who we're called to be. I remember one of the first things you learn in piano lessons, because I've been doing music lessons all the way through the series, one of the first things you learn is to do proper fingering. So you teach little kids when they learn piano that your thumb is number one, this is number two, this is number three, this is number four, this is number five. Put your thumb on middle C, play one, two, three, four, five. And when you're learning songs, they have numbers, so you use the proper fingers. And I remember it used to throw me off, because if you're playing a scale is just a series of seven notes. If you're playing a scale, the easiest thing for any of us to do would be to sit down and go, bum, 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 just like it's easy to type on a typewriter with two fingers. You get good at it, right? Dun, dun, dun. My teacher, she made me say, no, when you're doing a scale, the first pattern you learn is you go 1, 2, 3, then you tuck your thumb under, and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then you go back down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then you bring your third finger over, 3, 2, 1. So your scale is da da da, thumb under, da na 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 na, third over, da na na. Oh, sorry, I was one way. Da, da, na, na, na. And at first it seems really awkward. It's like, why can't we just go? That seems natural, but you learn the proper fingering and you learn. And you realize you can do it faster when you do it the right way. And what felt awkward at first becomes habit, and it becomes the only way you play, and you realize you can play stuff the way you never could have played it if you stuck to your own stubborn way of doing things. That's what it's like in the Christian world. The old ways of the age of darkness is comfortable, it's easy, and it feels like the right way to do things. What Christ is calling to is difficult, it feels awkward, it feels almost wrong at times, it goes against our natural nature. But the more we practice it, the more we realize that we are becoming who Jesus has called us to be. We're becoming creatures that feel at home in the new heavens and the new earth. It's all about developing that habit, and it starts with the mind. Here's the last text I'll take you to, Romans 12, 1-2. Again, a very popular text, but it couldn't be more fitting for what we're looking at. Romans 12, 1-2. N.T. Wright says this is the beginning of the so what section of Romans. 11 chapters of theology, and then chapter 12 is the so what. I appeal to you, because of all I've written, because of all that doctrine, all that theology, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world. Wright translates it, don't be squeezed into this world's mold. I thought that was a good metaphor. Don't be squeezed into this world's mold. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It starts in your mind. That by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. You notice right off the bat, he uses priestly imagery here. I said that we're called to worship and to reign. We're called to be priests and kings. And he starts by talking about priests and offering sacrifices, because that's what we're called to do. He says, offer your bodies. And when he says, offer your bodies to God, he means offer everything. When we read it, we can think, oh, we're to offer God our bodies. Okay, so we don't offer him our minds, we don't offer him our souls or our spirits, but we'll offer him our bodies, we'll offer him the fleshly part. That's not what he's getting at all. He's using the image of a sacrifice, and he's basically saying, there's the altar, climb up. It takes all of you. He requires our entire lives. But instead of the sacrifice being killed, we are called to live for him instead, with everything we have in us. And our bodies are directed by our minds. What we do is influenced, is commanded, is directed by how we think. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be academically minded to be a good Christian, because that's a bunch of nonsense. But it means you have to think about what you're doing. I have to think about what I'm doing in this Christian life and not live life on autopilot. I was leaving the hospital from a visit a couple weeks ago, and I drove out the back direction because that's where they want pastors to park out back. And if you know, you drive out the back street and you get down that big steep hill to Manitoba, and if I go right, I go to my house, and if I go left, I go into town. Well, usually I try to make hospital visits the last thing of my day, so I don't drive out there and then drive back and then drive home. I'll just drive there, visit for a bit, and then head home from there. But this day I had to come back because I had forgot some things. And I'm leaving the hospital and thinking, okay, I gotta pick up that book before I go home. Get to the car, gotta pick up that book before I go home. Hop in the car, gotta pick up that book before I go home. I come down that hill, Manitoba's in front of me, which way do I turn? Right. I gotta go home. Have you ever done that? If you have to break out of your routine, you turn the wrong way down the road. Have you ever found yourself showing up at a place and thinking, oh, why did I drive here? Because that's the way you're used to driving all the time? Yeah, you're laughing nervously because some of you have done that. That's what life is like on autopilot. When we just turn our mind off and go the way our habits make us go. We're called as believers not to live our lives on autopilot. but to consciously think about what we are doing. Otherwise, we will be squeezed into this world's mold. If we don't think about how we're living, we will, by default, be squeezed into the world's mold. One more story, and this might not be an image you want, but my parents can probably attest to this. There was one time in high school where I bought jeans that were a little too tight for me. It was cool at one point, right? Not cool now. Not cool now. But I remember, like, going out to a youth activity, and you get these jeans on, and you get them to here. And it's a struggle the rest of the way, right? You're laying on your bed, you're reefing on them, you have both hands on this side, you're getting an inch, and then it... Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit on how tight they were, but, yeah, you suck in everything you got just to get the button tight, and then you... And you wind up looking like the jeans. Because if you get in there, you look like the way the jeans were made. Doesn't matter what shape you are, you look like the jeans. If we don't think about what we're doing in this Christian life, we will end up looking like the world. If we just live a happy life on default and make God a little part of our life on Sunday, we will end up looking like the old age. And we will, I'm not saying you lose your salvation or anything like that, but when we are revealed in glory, when the day comes, when the day is finally dawned in its fullness and the old age is finally put to an end, we won't have a clue what to do. Because we won't have developed those qualities of heart that make us fit for life in the new age. We need to consciously, repeatedly, determinedly focus our minds on the people that we are to become. There's lots of verses. We've looked at the Beatitudes. We've looked at the Colossians verses. Think about those qualities of heart and keep them ever before us. Because the way we think is the way we will turn in life. What we focus on is where we will go. So we need to have our minds focused on life in the new heavens and the new earth. And this is particularly awkward for Pentecostals because what are we known for? Going on feeling. Right? We're known for the experience. We're known for experiencing God and having great feelings with God, which is a beautiful side effect of the Pentecostal life that I love. But we got to engage our minds. We have to be thinking about what we're doing in this life. Otherwise, we'll wind up looking like the world. So I hope I've encouraged you a little bit today to think about how we can develop a heart for God going from here on. Life is far too short to live on autopilot. It's far too short to not think about what we're doing. So if I can encourage you anything this week, engage your mind. When you react to a situation, pause afterward and think, is that the way I should have reacted? Or is there a better way to do things? Meditate on, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the peacemakers. Meditate on those verses until they become a part of who you are. And then we will see a change, not only for the new heavens and the new earth, but you'll see a change in life today. It'll affect the way this church is now. And it'll affect it in a beautiful way. So let's all stand.